Hello, I think the mic's working. Can you hear me at the back okay? Excellent. First of all, thanks for coming. If you are here to learn about tips and tricks for Power BI, you're in the right place. I hope your morning tea was good. My name's Phil Seamark. I work at Trade Me. We do an awful lot with Power BI since it started last year. I'm not going to be talking much about that, but since we have been playing with Power BI, I've collected a bunch of tips and tricks that I thought I would share. I was lucky enough to get to the Data Insights Summit in Seattle in February this year. There were lots of really good sessions, and one in particular that I quite enjoyed was a session like this, where some of the program managers went through a bunch of hints, tips, and hacks. I was hoping to cheat and actually share most of those with you today, but they've since fixed most of the hacks with actual genuine features in Power BI. But I've managed to cover, a wide variety of things, and if you do walk away with one or two things that you'll use, then I hope I've done okay. All right. So it's going to be a demo-heavy session, something I swore I'd never do, but let's just hope the internet goes well. And I have got a bunch of Power BI t-shirts here, about 8 or 9, so any interesting questions or helpful points, no doubt will earn a Power BI t-shirt. There are a variety of sizes, so it's a bit potluck. Some of them, they came from America, so they are very large, but let's just see how we go with that. And actually, one of the things I wouldn't mind doing is testing the Power BI API by getting you a bit later to log on to Trade Me, because I work at Trade Me, and do a simple search, and we'll have a look at the results, and maybe we can allocate some t-shirts like that. But first of all, let's have a look at some demos and tips. I thought I'd start with an easy one, which is just the straight ordering of fields. Now, if you're using Power BI already, you've probably picked this one up already, but I just thought I'd highlight one or two extra features about this. Now, most people, when they first bring data in, particularly date data like this, they'll see months and days a little confusing. They'll say, well, this ordering is not right. We've got days of the week at the top ordered alphabetically, F, M, etc. And I have months at the bottom. I'm not sure if you can see that okay, but it's starting with all the A's, the D's, the F's, and it's alphabetic. Now, in Microsoft modeling environments, this is usually sorted as easily as finding the particular column in the modeling environment and just finding the equivalent sort by column. So I'm going to now sort my month ID, and my days of week simply sort by a numeric column that is already pre-sorted. So when I jump back to my reporting canvas, I now see the days ordered correctly and the months ordered correctly. But one thing that's not so obvious is in visuals like the clustered column chart, that exact same ordering actually has the effect on the order of the way these are here. So while days and months might be a really obvious one you want to sort, there might be other categories that you perhaps want to make sure that you might have some really important categories that don't start with A or Z. And you might want to allocate a sort ID column that brings that to the top or brings that to the bottom, because sometimes with these clustered column charts, it can look a bit odd when you have a really, really large chunk of data, then some little ones, then another large chunk. So you can, in fact, override that simply by going to your data model, introducing a numeric column that you perhaps sort your dimension value by. The other area that actually has an influence on is your field list as well. So if I bring out the visualization field, I try to. Incidentally, I was not sure what kind of data to actually use for this presentation of working at Trade Me. There's lots and lots of really interesting data at Trade Me, but I can't necessarily share that in an environment like this. So last year when I moved into a new house out in the country in Wellington, I bought a weather station, and I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm going to keep track and just see what happens in this microclimate of the place that I live. and get a feel over time. And while I spent a bit of money on the weather station, a good few hundred dollars, I was really disappointed in the software it came with. And I looked around, I thought, okay, this might be something that is just a quirk of the weather station, and I downloaded a few other ones, and the trial versions were really, really poor. And I thought, hang on, the Power BI actually can probably provide a really neat view over my own weather data for free. So what we're going to be looking at for a lot of these charts is actually that weather data. The data itself isn't so much interesting, it's more the tips that I'm hoping will be useful. So that's a bit of background about the data. So now we've got our visualization field come out. If I scroll down to the where it can be set, so the day of the week is actually sorted here. So equally, I can introduce a numeric column into my data model, and that can influence the order things might appear here. So if you've got a really important subcategory or category, you can override that. So that was a nice, easy starter one. A common trap that I see, particularly with analysts using Power BI in my experience at TradeMe, is quite often what they tend to do is go overboard on the tabs at the bottom. So if there are five or six key metrics, and maybe I have five key metrics here, what they'll tend to do is they'll create a sheet for each one, and they'll force the end user to have to do lots of jumping around. And to be fair, out of the box, it's quite difficult in Power BI to compress that down, but we have had quite a lot of success in making nicer dashboards by taking advantage of some of the dynamic features in DAX to actually compress that down. So here for a start, what I have is a dynamic date range. This is a rolling range that will always show the most recent 10 or 30 days. And tomorrow when new data comes in, it'll actually show the appropriate rolling day. And I'm not having to go to my filters off to the right and untick something and tick something out and force the user to actually do a lot more than they need to. So how I achieved this, in the data model, what I did was created a date range table, which just has these numbers here. And let me actually add a row here to show you how simple that is. So let's just throw in 365 last. 365 days. Then what I do is back in Power BI, I have a measure. Date ranges, dynamic. Where is it? It is date range filter, which lives, if I can find it. This is a piece of dynamic, here we go, DAX, that simply looks up. So when I make a selection on my filter, so I select that new one that I've just added, it'll effectively do a between. So it'll take the current date, which is now, and subtract the amount that I took off, which was the ID from the date range table, and of course just have the between of now. That creates a filter, true or value, true or false, of one or zero. Now if I drag this measure that I've created into the filter setting of any visual, it will respect this. So now I have a last 365 days. So that dynamic measure, I always say, well, it must equal one. So it means tomorrow when I look at this data, I get the appropriate recent date range, and I can add and remove these to suit the user's needs, which I think's not too bad. With dynamic measures, again, I don't want to have a chart per measure. I actually just want to use a single chart and just reuse measures. Now, this is not something that Power BI does out of the box, but you'll see here I've got some five measures: air pressure, humidity, max temp.
And these visuals are actually changing. Oh, sorry, the top one is, because I have it wired to whatever I select here. Again, compressing the actual amount of space you need to put together a dashboard. So similar to the date table, what I did in the data model was I created a hard-coded table with just these six values. So I just enter data. I actually just key this in, type this into Power BI. But like the date table, there is an ID column, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And this is important that I remember what these are. So max temp is 1, min temp is 2. So I jump back to data modeling environment. In my measures, here we go. So I create a measure value, which is just a simple DAX switch statement. So when a user on a slicer selects an individual value, it will return 1 max temp, 2 min temp, 3 air pressure. So that's how it's wired up. And the actual values, these are the actual values that it reads through. So I think that, and for me to extend this, all I need to do is just adjust the appropriate switch statement, add the relevant ID into the measure table, and I can combine these here, so I can have the last 10 days of max temp to reduce the amount of pages I actually need to use. Another thing you can see here is colouring of the bar charts. What I am doing here is I'm emphasising dynamically the columns that are weekends. Now, you might have another reason to emphasise these. So the approach I do here is in the date table, I have a is weekend piece of DAX, which is just simply is the weekday number higher than 5, Monday's 1, Tuesday's 2, Wednesday's 3. If it is, then 1, else 0. Now that returns to a calculated column called is weekend. That means when I look at my bar chart and I'm determining the colour saturation, so you can see my mouse there hopefully, the colour saturation will return a 1 or 0, so that's how I can emphasise weekends. Now, you might want to have more sophisticated DAX in the ones you want to highlight. One idea might be to highlight the fact that the most recent day is not necessarily a complete day, so you might want to make that red as opposed to the rest of the colours to sort of show the end user that things aren't going bad, it's just you're only looking at partial data. The extension on the measure table is you can go start getting a little bit more sophisticated and start creating some things like rolling averages. So here what I have in a piece of DAX is something that looks very similar to that measure name value I showed you before, where I'm using those same switch values, but I'm wrapping it into a slightly bigger piece of DAX, which is just averaging the last 6 days for that measure. So if I drag this onto my visual chart, get that out of the way. So what we can see here is the black line is now the rolling 7 day average. If we go to a 100 day period, you get a smoothed out line. And I have a similar one which is identical to the 7 day average, it's just a 30 day average. And you'll see now, when I jump around here, the measures respect the selections the user has made. And I haven't had to go to the field list or off to the side, so I can stay on a single screen. At TradeMe, we're using iPads out on the field quite a lot, and the field list is a real pain to get to. So being able to just hit a slicer like this with your finger does make the experience a lot nicer. Another thing I'm doing on this particular page is using DAX to create dynamic annotation. So here at the top we have chart showing min temp for last 30 days, but when I make other selections, it's adjusting accordingly. Out of the box, you can't have dynamic titles on a visual. So what all this is a visual in its own right, and it's using a measure called dynamic chart title. And if we have a look at what that looks like, it's really just an exercise in string concatenation. It's saying, if I have made a single selection from my measure table, which I have done, I've selected max temp, then concatenate some text saying chart showing the single value for the equivalent logic over the date range, which, again, to the end user, just gives them a more pleasant experience. And in fact, what I've done down here in the right-hand side is something slightly richer. If I go, say, to the last 10 days, if I select a day from the bar chart on the right, so I've selected a day, the text updates accordingly. And the text has some dynamic logic in there too. So it's saying that for Monday, which was 2 days ago, the temperature max temp was a warm 23.2 degrees. But of course, if I make a filter selection, it's now telling me, oh no, these are hard-coded to max temp. So we have a look at that DAX, DAX annotation. Here's the logic. So it gets a little bit more sophisticated, but it's not too bad. And it's really just saying, well, if concatenate, the max temp was, so this is all hard-coded, if it was higher than 25, say a hot, if it was higher than 15, a warm, else a cool. And then if nothing is selected, it just gives you that. And I think it rounds the page out quite nicely. Oh, actually, that's interesting. To achieve the rolling averages, now I had a challenge here where the readings I collect, I've got about 1.8 million readings, and I have, for any given day, every minute or so, there's a max reading, and I didn't want to average the individual readings within a day. What I wanted to do was take an average of the max temperature across the day. I only had one set of data. So what I wanted to do inside DAX was actually create a dynamic table summarising the data down to the value I needed. So in my model, my fact table, so this is where the genuine data is actually coming into readings, has 1.8 million records. What I wanted to do was create a table Can I see the logic for that? Readings, where is that? Readings daily. Just trying to find the... it's just catching up on me for some reason. There is, in Power BI, there is the option for you to create a table dynamically from existing data. In fact, you can create tables from other tables. And it's simply in the modeling environment to go new table. And this table can be a simple thing, like I want my new table to be called dates 2, and it can be equal to an existing table like dates. And that will actually create, once this catches up, an in-memory identical copy of my original table. And if I look in the modeling view, it's probably created it out to the side here, which if I delete. I was hoping to show you the DAX to create the readings, but I can't seem to find where it is. The DAX statement is just a simple summary. Oh, here we go, here it is. So I've created a table called Readings Daily, which uses the DAX function summarize. What I want to do is summarize my original table, so this is the real data, but I want to group it by date. And for each day, just grab the max value for each of these things, and that's what I pump into my rolling average, so I'm genuinely just averaging out 7 values rather than several hundred thousand values, and getting the data that I want to. But that's kind of neat, the fact that I can, in DAX, create tables. One last tip before I move off this page is a really common field I find very valuable in almost all data models we look at is a concept of just introducing a days from today column into your date table, which if I jump to, this can go away. Dates, days from today, just has a running number which updates each day. So tomorrow the 26th will have a value of 1. The next day the 26th will have a value of 2. But it does mean in Power BI you can easily take advantage of this to have dynamic date ranges in your filter value. So you can say just hard code it to be just show me the last 10 days, and the user won't have to do any updating of date ranging, which is kind of cool. All right, so let's carry on because I've got a bit to get through. So while I've got some simple annotation here, one of the neat things that Power BI have done is they've cozied up to a company called Narrative Science, and they have a custom visualization that you can import into your Power BI desktop that provides a much better annotation product. So let's try that out. If I drag date over here, turn that into this, let's start building this, and we'll give it a max temp and a min temp. There we go, max temp and min temp. Now what that's asking me, I don't know if that's easy to read, is my data discrete, continuous, percentage, or scatter plot? I'm going to say this is continuous because it's over time. And I'm going to ask it to write a narrative. I will set the font to be a lot larger. So here we go. So what's happened is the Narrative Science visual has taken the data that I have filtered, it's packaged it up and sent it back to its servers. So you want to be careful with this, that it's genuinely not sensitive data. Then its servers have written a story and brought that back to my Power BI desktop. But this is dynamic and relevant. So if I make a change to a selection here, this will refresh and update accordingly. And if we zoom in and have a look at what it's saying, and in fact, let's configure this a little bit. What can we do here? We'll go plus. So I'm going to, where it says for days, it's currently using the term period, which I don't necessarily want. We'll just come down. I'm going to say when it's days, let's go with this and days. So add that variation. Oh, we don't want that variation. There are characteristics. So numbers, neutral. Do we want to sum these? No. For maximum temperature, relationships, what kind of analytics we might want it to look at, and any highlighting we want to do. And I prefer for readability, bullet list. So here, if I come out of Zoom mode, the analysis measures for max temp and min temp by date. Both min temp and max temp increase from, I don't like that date format, so I will, I'll drop in one that's formatted a little nicer to read. Get rid of this. It's just doing its refresh to the service. Here we go. So it's writing a fairly sophisticated summary with a number of observations, insights, etc., that for some people they prefer reading information like this, and it kind of complements, it enhances the visual. Let's just have a look at the last 3 days, and I do have the power to, or the control to say, let's make this really, really verbose. I think the round trip will probably be a little longer, but here we go. This will probably melt it down. 365 days. And there's some bold there to highlight some key points, but it's kind of interesting. So like I say, it does send the data to narrative science, so you want to be careful with what data you want to perhaps enhance like this, but it's free, and it's probably worth a little bit of a play. And you can connect it to scattergrams and things like that. I'm not sure. Possibly. An on-premise version would be pretty cool. They update it all the time. So when I first started using this visual, I thought, okay, I've downloaded the custom visual and imported it into my Power BI environment. But this is version one, and I know they're going to enhance it. But all the updates they do happen in the back end. So it just continually seems to have more and more features the more you look at it. So. This next tile, one of the, if you've played with Power BI, when you pin a visualization to a dashboard, when you see it on the dashboard, you can't click it to interact with it. When you click on the tile, it takes you to the report page it came from. What you can in fact do, if you want to have a normal size tile that is interactive, one approach is to actually play with the page size. So what I have on this particular Power BI dashboard, when I select the page background, the Format Painter gives me the ability to choose the width and the height. And if I hard code in the exact size of a standard dashboard tile, when I go to pin this page as a live tile, then it will actually look exactly like any of the other tiles there, but give you the ability to interact with that on the dashboard. So it's not particularly obvious here while we're still on the Power BI desktop, but once we publish this and pin live tile, it won't be like a big behemoth if you've done that already, and it can actually sit side by side with other tiles, and you can do some quite cool things with the page size. So I just thought I'd highlight that. Okay, so forecasting. One of the recent additions that they have added to Power BI Desktop is the ability to have a line chart with some forecasting. So again, we're working with the same data here. So this top visual is just the standard line chart. When you have a single series on the analytics pane now at the bottom, you have the ability to add a forecast line. And you can see here there is a forecast black line. And the forecast properties, I can ask it to go out, say, 20 points or some seasonality if you have a seven-day week and some confidence level. So there's a small number of properties that you can set, and it will attempt to forecast that out. Currently, if I publish this to Power BI Service, that service hasn't quite caught up yet, so this will just look like a line chart. But if you do want to get some forecasting in between now and when they release it, what I have here in the bottom is an R visual with about four lines of code. I can't load the IDE. Which takes exactly the same data and simply does a basic forecast. If you want to learn more, or if you already know an awful lot more about R, then you have a lot more ability to customize the forecasting functionality. And when I publish this to the service, this does work. So we'll have a look at that once we publish that. So for bidirectional relationships, this is an interesting new feature that they've added with 2016, not just to Power BI, but to analysis services. So Tabular Cubes have this. I think to some degree, maybe Excel, I'm not too sure. I've got a funny feeling it's maybe not there. So bidirectional relationships, if I jump to another Power BI model, so now we're dealing with another data set. This data set is a classic sales, products, and dates. So over on the left-hand side, we have a, I've just got the same model duplicated twice. So we've got a bunch of sales, there's about 11 million sales in here, so there's quite a lot. We have a single row per day and products. Now, here you'll notice on the relationship tab, there's a small arrow here that goes one way. So you have the one-to-many relationships and it's actually showing which way the relationship goes. Now, what that means is if I want to do anything slightly, not unusual, but if I want to show per day not only the sum of my revenue measure, but also the number of products that were sold on that day. Now, I could count distinct on this measure, but if I wanted to do it from this particular table here, this would not work. And if I have a look at the relationship view, what that in fact looks like is a bunch of repeating numbers. So we have a category of mixed rural urban, 201, 743, 201, 743, 201, 743. So it's not actually working because there's no way the data can, the model can find the detail it needs through this relationship view. So to solve that, there's this new concept called a bidirectional relationship. And you'll notice here that on the relationship, the arrow goes two ways. And when I click on the relationship, I can set it to be single or both. So these identical table sets, when I look at them now in the relationship view, what we have is on the left-hand side, everything's exactly the same. And on the right-hand side, we have dynamic numbers. Now, this is probably quite hard to read. So what I'm going to do is set my matrix style to be minimal, and I'm going to set my font to be something a little larger so it fits. And because these are two similar visuals, what I can do is click my Format Painter and just apply those changes to my new visual. What we have is that one simple change to set a relationship from single directional to bidirectional. Everything else is the same. What I can see for individual days, not only the revenue data, but also a correct count of products. You can do this now by organising your tables appropriately, but that means a lot more work than maybe simply one click. The background behind it is the relationship that you set to be bidirectional effectively merges those two tables into one logical table for the model. So you can't just simply go crazy and set them all to bidirectional because you'll end up with loops. So you do still have to be quite careful about not only which two tables you might want to turn this feature on, but the order that you do that as well. So what I find is the traditional relationship approach works in most cases, and you can turn this on when it suits. But for some many-to-many scenarios, this does make life a lot easier. Although I haven't tested this with very, very, very large data sets. In this model, sales is, I think it's 11 million rows, not sure how many are in products. It's 2,500 products. So that's a good thing to be aware of that's new. And yeah, like I said, I believe SQL Tabular 2016 has this, and I'm just not quite sure about Excel 2016. But I think it's pretty cool. So jumping back to Power BI Desktop. All right, this is kind of cool. Well, I think so anyway. It took me a little while to realise, but Power BI is in fact just a tabular cube. In fact, when I have a look using Task Manager, if this can come up. Nope, it's not coming up. And you look at Power BI, the executable that it's hosting is just MSMDSRV. I think it's just the Microsoft Multidimensional Service. And this is kind of handy if you want to, once you've got your model up and running, to optimize it, you can connect directly to your Power BI desktop using tools such as DAX Studio, Excel, SSMS, and Profiler. So how that looks is I'll close this down even. I don't save. I can open something like Deck Studio. And in fact, Deck Studio is really good. It recognizes and it can show if you've got Power BI Desktop up and running. And here we go, I'm actually connected to my model. So evaluate, say dates, run that. And there we go. I'm actually querying my my model. Here, I have SQL Server Management Studio, and I'm connected, I think, to my machine. And I am running 593. Connection, change connection. 593. You just have to be wary of the port number. Because when you close Power BI Desktop down, it's gone. And next time you open Power BI Desktop, it's actually on a different port number. So the only thing you need to do is go and find out what that port number is. But here, I'm writing MDX, which is awesome. MDX is not dead against Power BI Desktop. I can start up my SQL profiler. And this profiler is running against my Power BI Desktop. I need to turn on some things like query begin and query end, and so all these tools that have been around for quite a long time. I'll just turn on a bunch of things. So that's running. I'm going to switch back to SMS and run this. Go to profiler, and there we go. We can see some events. So I can start diagnosing and having a look to see what's going on under the covers. I can't change them. I can't influence the DAX or the MDX that Power BI is generating, but I can at least get a feel for perhaps maybe why it's filtering in a particular way or doing something wrong. And likewise, I can connect via Excel. This is an Excel pivot table that I've connected to my Power BI Desktop model, and this even respects those dynamic measures that I created to make that particular single page useful. Again, when I close Power BI Desktop, it's gone. But one of the neat things you can do with this, this is probably the most handy thing, is Casper de Jong, a little while ago, he built an Excel spreadsheet that would connect to tabular cubes and send a DMV query asking the tabular cube how memory was allocated. And he wrote a bunch of VBA to split apart the result set, and you could display. You could drill down through your tables, dimensions, and columns, etc., to see where the memory was actually being chewed up. So I thought, okay, we could do that in Excel. We could connect Excel to Power BI, and I did that. His spreadsheet works beautifully. You just have to give it the port number. But I thought Power BI actually probably will do a better job. So I'm going to use Power BI here to optimize Power BI. So I have a second instance of Power BI Desktop here. When I go to my queries, and if you want to, yeah, just email me at the end if you don't have time to sort of see this, but all it's doing is issuing against this database, sorry, this tabular cube with this database, and you can suck this out using SSMS. It's issuing this DMV statement. This is exactly the same DMV statement that was used in that Excel spreadsheet. But what I can do is take advantage of the Power Query to split that up by delimiter and return that to an environment here. Now what I can see is in my model, I have a column called batch ID, which is using 21 megs. Now I know that particular batch ID is every single individual reading. So every minute I think this is updated. But I don't use it in my Power BI Desktop. I use it to suck out the date and the time. But it's highlighting to me some inefficiency in file size. So I want to probably get rid of this. And first of all, before I actually remove the column, I can see that the file size is 12 megs of the model I'm trying to optimize. So if I go back into Power BI, and this is the one I want to optimize, if I go to my relationship view, sorry, not my relationship view, my model view, and find that batch ID column, which is sitting in the readings, because it's in my fact table, there's 1.8. There we go. So My batch ID column, this is the one that's chewing up all the memory. It's 21 megs uncompressed. There are, of the 1.5 million rows, 500,000 of those are distinct, whereas in reality, for date, I've only got 473 distinct values. So that's really cool. So I'm going to delete this. Right-click and delete. And it's gone. Now, I'm not going to save anything. It's just disappeared from my model. My pages all still work. If I go properly to the most complicated one, these are all still behaving. If I go to my other Power BI desktop where I am optimizing, I just simply refresh that DMV query. That's going to bring back the data. And there, gone. It's my model has just saved 20 megs, and it still works. Now, I wasn't aware of that. This highlighted this to me. And if I now save my Power BI desktop model, which was 12 megs, it's now 2.7 megs. So publishing, just the whole memory footprint is going to be that much faster now, which is kind of handy. I had a recent example where an analyst who was using Power BI for the first time just sucked in some data. The file size was 800 megs. I think the limit's 1 gig before you can publish it or stop publishing it to Power BI web service. And using this tool, or showing her how to use this tool, she got her model down to about 40 megs and did everything she needed to do. So I think that's quite a handy tip. And I like the idea of using Power BI to optimize Power BI. You can actually point it to itself if you really want to get sort of weird and circular. But all right, that's probably enough for the Power BI desktop for now. I will publish this and let's have a look at the API, because publishing data and using the gateway is one way to get data into the Power BI environment, but there are a couple of other ways using the API. So first of all, I will create a new dashboard and just, we'll call this random number. We're going to send some random numbers to Power BI. So I have a blank dashboard, I'm going to add a tile, and the tile I'm going to add is some custom streaming data. This doesn't exist yet. I haven't pre-prepared anything here. So this you'll see how fast it is to put something together. In fact, there's one already there. I'm just going to get rid of that. So delete. Cool. So on my random number desktop. Streaming data. I want to create a streaming data set. I want to use the API. I'll call this random something. Random stream. I'm going to have a value called TS for timestamp, val1, val2. We'll make that a date time. We'll make that a number. And we'll make that a number. And you'll see here it's showing the JSON format that it's going to want data sent to it in. So long as I can construct a string that is in this JSON format, it should work. I'll turn historical analysis on. I'm going to create that as an endpoint. And it is giving me a URL endpoint. Now, the good thing about this is the amount of code to get data in is really, really light. I have a Visual Studio application here. This is just a console app that's quite short. That's the length of it. All I'm simply going to do is initialize a random number, and I'm going to have two versions of that. They will be the same starting point, but then as I iterate through a loop, it's just going to change them individually, randomly, up or down by between -3 and 4. And then I'm going to post the current date time of the loop plus the value for val1 and the value for val2. And so here is all that I really care about constructing the JSON. And then I have a bunch of lines that just do some web posts. No passwords, no user IDs, nothing. The only thing that actually joins these all up is this really long GUID. So if someone really wanted to post to your API stream, they could, but they'd have to be pretty keen. So I'm just going to kick this off. So this is going to now say, all right, It's working. It's running a loop every half second, I think. Yeah, 500 milliseconds. So let's jump back and make sure that that's actually working. Random number, let's add a tile. We're actually going to add a tile this time. We're going to use that random stream. Line chart, I use my TS was my axis, and my value is, come on, there we go. And next. So that's actually working now. And we'll apply that. Because I told, when I created this data set, I wanted to keep historical. It means I can go back into here and start creating some more sophisticated reports. So we've got the Power BI desktop environment in the web, and I can perhaps go like this. There we go, val 1 and val 2. And I'll pin that to random. Doesn't matter. And we'll pin that to that dashboard that I've just created. So we have side by side two different ways to get the same thing onto the screen. And one's a streaming flow, one's a little more static, but as you can see, they're updating quite flash. And I'll leave them alone and they can diverge or do whatever they want to do. The downside of this simple API creation is that you don't have the ability to build calculated measures or calculated columns. For that, we have you can take advantage of the full API where you can create your data set via JSON. And there are two versions of this. There's the released version and then there's a beta preview. The beta preview has got some more functionality. So let's just quickly go into that. I'm really... So Power BI for developers. They provide a connect to Power BI through your app. Try the API. So via APRI, I can do some things like let's say I want to data sets connect list my data sets. This is going to give me a some code, and I can pick what language perhaps that might be in. I can switch to a console, and I can call a resource. And the return value, when I scroll down, will be in JSON. These are all my data sets if I jump back to there. But I'm going to create a data set using the API. So reference. Data sets, create a data set, switch to example, nope, switch to console. So here, what it's going to do is create a data set called push advanced. Well, this has actually changed from yesterday. This is quite fancy. And in the JSON, you can see here that there is a date table with one column. There's a sales table. There's a measures table with format strings, so there's quite a lot here. So I'm going to scroll up to find the call. Here, call that resource. And if I jump back to my Power BI environment and down to my data sets here, so we actually now have a data set that I can start pumping data into. And I can use that APRI environment to send data to that. But what I have here in Visual Studio is an app that will create a data set for me. It's called Weather API 2. It has JSON-defined structures. So I have two tables, one called date with a number of columns. And I can even include suggestions like how to sort my readings and relationships as well. And calculated measures. It, as far as I know, it can't do calculated columns, but you can do calculated measures, which is kind of cool. So I'm going to run this. Now, this does require me to log in. It's more sophisticated. You can get a lot of this logic off GitHub. I'm going to confirm my identity and log in. Now, what this is going to do is actually send 1.8 million rows in the space of a couple of minutes, just via my laptop. So I've paused this with a breakpoint, so I can see there's a new data. I have a new data set, and I'm going to just go with dates and max, and measure can be outside temp, and I'll turn that into a chart, and I'll pin this, I'll pin it to my random one, API 2. So what this chart is showing is what has been loaded into my data set so far, and I've got the data set paused. So I jump to random number, drag that one up there, I'll get rid of that one. I'll go back to my Visual Studio and run this. And I have this set to, again, every half second, it's going to do a query to the database. It actually summarizes it down to day via stored procedure, but it's sending these up to Power BI. So this chart here is all of that data being loaded in, but this model, like you saw, through JSON, you can define calculated measures. It does work with things like Q&A, doesn't work with Quick Insights, but it's pretty fast and easy to start sending data up to Power BI. So the last thing I probably wanted to cover is a pretty neat feature to give you some insights into what might be coming for Power BI. I'm going to jump to a different browser here. If we have a look at the source code of Power BI, so just on the main page, I was just playing around one day and I thought, oh, this looks interesting. When we scroll down, there's a whole bunch of feature switches. I don't know if you can see that easily or not, but there are around 150 odd. A lot of them are set to true, but there are some that are set to false. Now, because Power BI service gets updated once a week, Power BI desktop gets updated once a month, they quite often release a feature to the service but disable it. So I always check the version every other day, and if there's a change, I go, let's have a look to see what new feature switches they've got and turn them on. So what I can do is put a breakpoint on here, and run this. So refresh my Power BI, and there, I'm at this breakpoint. So if I, and you just get to this via the F12 button. What you can see here is I'm stepping through each individual feature switch. There's one here that's set to false. Let's just set that to true and see what happens. In fact, let's jump down to here. Let's run to the next breakpoint, because I'm going to cheat a little bit. And I'm going to copy the entire text of this particular line. I thought I got in trouble with Microsoft because I was doing this and tweeting out some screenshots of some features that I had turned on. And I got a call from Seattle saying, oh, how are you doing this? What version have you got? And people in the MVPs in Australia are complaining that you can see things that they can't. And I sort of explained over the phone how I was doing it. And they're like, that's cool. And I got invited, I think it's a good thing, into a club that does see their internal version, which is pretty cool. So let's find false and replace with true, replace all. Grab that text, jump back to my window here, console. And don't worry if you can't remember this. The main thing is to email me and I can give you more detail. I can give you the copies of all these or put them, make them available, including these steps. So I think that might be now running. Here we go. So what we can see now is all of those feature switches have been turned on. We've got quite a different UI now. We can actually see some of the look and feel of what might be around the corner. I don't want that button. come on. Speed up. Still loading, I think. My workspace, sort of arranged quite differently. If we go into a report, API 2, so this is a report that I've just created. We can see some things like subscribe must be coming. That sounds interesting. That I'm guessing, I'd have to only assume, that that might be the ability for a user to say, I want this to be emailed to me. When I click on it, I can see a bit of a UI. Well, here we go. I want this to be sent to me every day. Now, if I jump back to my other browser and have a look at that same report, I don't see subscribe. Come back to here. Now, I can probably configure this, but when I go save and close, it won't start working. Well, the chances are it won't start working. Although there are some features like download as image, file, download a copy of the report, which is disabled, that are kind of cool. So if you do want to have a bit of a play, I wouldn't recommend this doing this in a production environment. Although I do know, I have noticed that if you put at the end of the URL a query string like question mark, feature name equals one, it will enable it and it will actually work. So if there is one particular feature in there that you do want to make available, you can send someone that in a link and it will actually work. But I don't recommend it because just, yeah. So I think that's pretty much all I have got for you today, which nearly rounds out our hour. I haven't given away any t-shirts, I'm afraid. That's a bit sucky. We can probably do a quick comp. So what if you have got a phone handy and you've got any ability to go into Trade Me, in the search bar, just type in Power BI and then left if you're over there, middle for there, or right for over there, anything you like, then this is syncing through to Power BI and whichever wedge has the most results. Maybe I can throw some t-shirts that way. So if we jump to that, now this is only on a 1 minute cycle, it's not real, but what I've effectively done here is back at work, I've got a little unit that's just every minute polling genuine Trade Me data. I haven't changed any of the core app, it's just watching the search data and it's sending it up to Power BI via the API. So let's just, I'm going to go Power BI stage and search. That'll probably give you some gobbledygook results, but for me, I should have done this earlier, sorry. It's sort of a real-time test that it's actually working. And it may not. Oh, actually, just one last thing, 1 minute, 15 seconds to go while that start is coming through, is if you haven't picked up already, on a dashboard, there's quite a neat feature here to see your dashboard in phone view, and you can design, so my weather data that I'm interested in, you can design the layout for the phone to be quite different for the desktop view, so that when I do jump in, you know, from the bus or whatever on the phone, you've got more control, you're not stuck to the same desktop view, which is kind of cool. Is this working? Have we got any data? Oh no. Refresh. Oh, here we go, here we go. Power BI middle is 11, Power BI 6, Power BI left is 4, center is 2, so we've got the middle, which is a larger wedge. I'll just give it 20 more seconds, and I'll refresh that. But what I'm trying to do here is just demonstrate there's another use of the API, and I didn't have to change anything in the actual core Trade Me app. I could just sort of bolt this on the end and just collect some data. And it's problem is it's on a 1 minute refresh, so I should have set this up earlier. No, I'm not collecting that. I'm definitely not collecting that. I promise. It's there, and the thing is, there's probably about 40 or 50,000 people on Trade Me right now outside this room. So the data has been filtered through quite nicely. Right, Power BI T-shirt, Power BI demos, Power BI Center. So last one, refresh. Oh, sorry. There we go. I did actually have a few extra things I wanted to cover. So I strongly recommend that that's the API limits. That Power BI Tips is a really good website. Dax Patterns. Finally, there are user groups in Auckland, Wellington, and Christchurch. If you're from those centres, you can learn, share. They'll be really good to get to. So lastly, how did this end up? Refresh. Oh, it's gonna go middle. So I'll throw a couple of t-shirts out. Other than that, thank you for coming. I'm gonna see if I can hit the back. Thank you very much, and enjoy Techie.